You've landed Inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Hey, everyday innovators, Tamara here. I want to take a second before we dig into this incredible podcast interview to share a personal story. It's actually why I wanted to have today's guest on the show. I was talking to a colleague the other day and this story came up. I haven't thought about it in a while. So when I was living in New York City after 18 months at an advertising firm, you know, I was 20, I don't know, 22 maybe. And of course, I thought I knew everything. So I jumped ship to open up a little marketing firm to service all those incredible small shops in New York City. Now, when I lived there, and as you know, if you live there or visited there, when you walk the streets of New York City, it is lined with shops. And I used to see them every day. I'd get up to go to work. I'd stop at Starbucks and get my Venti non-fat latte with like five sugars at the time. And then I would pass all these shops on the way to the subway, get out, same thing on the other side, and back every single day. And what I started to notice is that about every 3 months, the shops would turn over. So, you know, what was once a cupcake shop turned into a shoe shop, which turned into a restaurant, which turned into a bookstore. Like there was just constant turnover. And I thought to myself, I know, I can bring all this marketing savvy from Madison Avenue, from the big creative shops, to these little guys and help them stay in business. So my friend and I, Lorraine was her name, and we actually did this together. We cooked this whole idea up, you know, late one night at like 2 o'clock in the morning in the office. So we set up shop in August in New York City in my unair-conditioned apartment. And we laid out a map of the city and we decided to go neighborhood by neighborhood by neighborhood. And I will tell you that in each instance, we would walk in and we'd say, you know, hi, we're from the Insight Group. That was the name of our very not so unique company at the time. Hi, we're with the Insight Group. And, you know, we can talk to you about brand strategy and influencer strategies and relationship building and customer retention programs. And each time, do you know what we got? Absolutely nothing. Nobody wanted to talk to us. None of these small businesses cared about what we had to say. And we would go shop after shop. I mean, we did this 7 days a week, 8 to 10 hours a day. Hundreds of stores that we talked to, if not thousands. I mean, we were out there hawking it. Nobody wanted what we were selling. Nobody cared what we had to say. And, you know, it was so funny. So eventually I had to close up shop. I mean, I couldn't stay open. I had to pay my rent. I had a Subway token and 1 month's rent to my name when I started this whole ordeal. And a couple months in, I was broke. So I went and got this actually incredible job. It turned into something great. But when I got the job, I had 2 weeks before I had to start. And I'm a little bit of a glutton for punishment. And we had one neighborhood that we walked into. And that we hadn't tackled. And it was just one little kind of couple block area. And I thought, you know what, just to prove to myself that this is a horrible idea, I'm going to go into these stores and talk to them. So I walked into the store and, you know, I would say that my demeanor, my tone, everything about me was a little bit different because I didn't actually care. I just was closing the loop. I don't like open loops. I like things completed. It's a weird other sickness I have. Other people have OCD issues with like cleanliness. For me, it's all about like closing the loop on things. I like things to be totally complete. So anyways, I go to the store and I'm, you know, relaxed, I'm calm, I'm engaged, I'm just totally different. I'm not desperate, I'm not selling, I'm not like throwing out big language. And I say to the woman, never forget her face. I said, hey, I'm Tamara, I'm with the Insight Group. I'd love to talk to you about how you can get more people in your store, maybe sell them some more of your clothing and like maybe even get them to bring in their friends. Do you know what she said to me? I heard something that I hadn't heard in months. She looked at me and she said, tell me more about that. And you know what, Launch Street? I had nothing to say. I wasn't expecting her to say anything. I was just there to prove that this was a horrible idea. I literally just slowly backed out of the store and ran down the street. Oh my gosh, I know. How ridiculous. But do you see what happened there? I went in with a whole different tone, and that changed my language, and that changed my outcome. And had I been paying attention to those softer cues, those the responses that I was getting from people, had I been thinking beyond myself and the product or the service that I was trying to get buy-in for, the idea that I wanted to push, we might be having a very different conversation. I might have built a very successful marketing firm in New York City, but I didn't because I wasn't paying attention. And here's the thing, we're all in sales all the time. So whether you are trying to get your boss to buy into your idea or selling directly to a customer or service, it's all about sales. And in essence, what that experience taught me all those years ago is that sales is really about leadership and influence. And the skills for leadership and influence aren't always the hard skills of knowing your job, you know, being able to talk about the features and benefits of your product, or even pounding the pavement and doing the activity. Those are all great and important, but the ones that matter more are actually the softer side of sales. And that's why I wanted to have Amy Frank on the show. Her book, Modern Seller, really outlines the traits needed to sell your stuff in today's world. And had I had that book all those years ago when I was hawking it in New York City on the cutthroat streets going from store to store, we might have a very different outcome today because I was missing that other side, that more elusive side of sales that matters even more. So Amy Franco is a keynote speaker, sales strategist, and author specializing in B2B, so business-to-business sales and sales leadership development. She works with professional services, insurance, technology organizations, so a wide range to accelerate their growth results. And her book, The Modern Seller, which is what we dig into, is an Amazon bestseller and was also named a 2019 top sales book by the Top Sales World. And she's recognized in sales world as one of the top 50 sales keynote speakers and top 50 sales bloggers in the world. So a lot of people look to her. She knows her stuff. She stopped by Launch Street. Let's hear what she had to say. Amy, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm looking forward to digging into your topic.
Oh, thank you so much, Tamara. It's great to be here.
So what's the one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
Probably the one thing they're most surprised about when I tell them that I'm the oldest of five daughters. I have four younger sisters. I am the oldest of five.
So I don't know if this ever happened in your house, but I have a younger sister, so it's two of us girls, not five, because that is a lot. That's a lot of anything, if you ask me.
Right.
But my dad used to always joke and say, I'd be a billionaire if it weren't for you girls. And like jokingly, but now that I'm a parent, I get it.
Yeah. Something along those lines. And then the other thing that I just still laugh about to this day, five of us shared a bathroom. So you can imagine five different of makeup, five different sets of hair products. And my dad used to joke that it was a waste of time to paint the bathroom every year or to clean the bathroom every year, clean the walls, because there was so much hairspray on it. He would just paint over it.
That's hysterical. It's like the stickiest, thickest wall ever.
Absolutely. That paint is going nowhere.
Oh my gosh. That's hysterical. That is a surprise. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, sure.
That's great. So I want to dig into your book, Modern Seller, which was fascinating to me. And I think the part of the reason I really wanted to have you on the podcast is that I think as innovators, you know, regardless of where we are on the organizational ladder, we're all selling at any given time, whether that's in presentations or in conversations or, you know, truly in sales roles. We're constantly needing to communicate in a way that gets buy-in from other people. So that's just for a little bit of context of why, why I wanted to have you on. But in your book, Modern Seller, you write, you'll reach a commoditization tipping point no matter how specialized or sophisticated your product or service is. Yes. I thought this was a good place to start. So tell me more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So in my work, the organizations or the types of industries that I work a lot with are professional services, insurance, and technology. So those are the big niches that I spend the most time in. And the reason that I wrote that and the thinking behind it is that it is really easy to think that the product that we sell, the service that we sell, even our expertise has a point where it can reach commoditization in the eyes of the buyer. Maybe not in our eyes, but in the eyes of the buyer. And it reaches commoditization when a buyer has a lot of options to choose from. And then we start to run the risk of not being memorable or meaningful in their eyes. So it's kind of a call to action to not become complacent and to not assume that just because we have a sophisticated, unique product or service, that there isn't someone out there who's looking to innovate on it, to make it better and to differentiate.
And wouldn't you say, Amy, that a lot of, you know, you said it, earlier this, that they have a lot of options. And I think that's true no matter what industry you're in. And it's been my belief that those options aren't even necessarily your direct competitors, the ones that you, you know, it's this versus that product, but they kind of do the same thing. That it really is all the options out there. And a lot of them are on the fringes even of what you do. Is that how you see the options too, and the kind of the clutter that that creates?
Yeah, I think you've hit on it. I think back to, so I got my start in technology, and I worked for IBM and I worked for Lenovo. And I had a traditional, what you'd call a traditional B2B enterprise sales job. And I sold PC technology, personal computing technology. And at that time, I probably had maybe half a dozen competitors. It was pretty easy to keep track of who your competitors are or were at that point in time. But today, the landscape has become so fuzzy that we can not only just look at who we think our traditional competitors are, to your point, we are competing against all their other choices, all the other clutter, and there's someone out there who's going to be a competitor 5 years from now that you're not even thinking about today.
Well, I love that you say that, Amy, because I think for us on Launch Street, that's a really important point. And it's been my experience that we have blinders on, we all do in our work, and we get kind of head down and we look very close in, and those, we don't even see those competitors until they've really made a dent in our world in some way. So we have to keep our eyes open from the very beginning, because, you know, like to your point, it's 5 years from now, right? But they've started now.
Yeah, right. And it is, you've hit on something I think is important, which is this concept that we have our blinders on, and it's really easy for us to kind of stay in our lanes, if you will. And one of the things that has helped me the most, and it takes real discipline to make this happen, but to get into different rooms of people, going to different events, looking at organizations that aren't even in my sphere, to learn about what they're doing or to connect with just new people and new perspectives, so that I can keep myself as much as possible from getting stuck in my own silos.
Mm. Mm, that's an interesting thing to do. I mean, you know what? It just made me think I should probably go venture out a little bit. Not talk to
me too.
I get to do it on the podcast, which is kind of nice, but it kind of reminded me like, hey, maybe I should get out of my usual area, my usual zone every now and again.
I know, it's so easy. And I have to force myself to do it, because it's easy to just stay in your lane, looking at your silos or staying in your silos and not getting out.
So being a salesperson is probably one of the oldest professions out there. I mean, any business anywhere had to do it from day one. How do you think selling, particularly in today's world, how has it evolved?
Oh, I think there's probably a few things that I could touch on. I would say, first of all, our buyers, they are a lot more sophisticated and a lot more well-researched than ever before. There's a lot of research out there that talks about how far along is someone in their buying process, and lots of different figures that could be debated. But the concept to take away is that our buyers have access to more information than ever before. Whether it's the right information is debatable, but they are doing a lot more on their own before they're even engaging us as sales professionals. So that's one thing that I see quite a bit of. The second thing is their expectations of us and what we bring to the table have really changed significantly. It's no longer enough to just have good working knowledge of your products or services.
So this is a part where I really want to dig in, because I hear you about that. And you said something that I think is really important, which is that the expectation of what we bring is drastically different today. And, you know, I'd love to get your perspective on this. I have found that regardless of the industry you're in, and in fact, I've worked with multiple kind of resellers and, you know, people who you would think, oh, pretty simple, right? Like, I've got a product, it works, and I sell it. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, even their clients are asking them to bring innovative ideas and solutions. They're asking them to be challenge solvers with them and opportunity finders with them versus just selling them a product or service.
Yeah, so part of how I see my own role as a sales professional and a consultant, I do quite a bit of consulting, is it's not just enough for me to have this product or service that I bring. I have to bring great ideas with it so that I prove my own value. And I would say another thing that sellers might want to just, it's food for thought, using our networks and using our networks to make introductions, to provide resources. Our network is one of the most valuable resources that we have. And we all, including myself, could be doing more to leverage our networks in the service of our prospects and clients and to differentiate ourselves.
I have, this is going to be a very tangible question, but it's a challenge I've had recently about my network. So I would love to hear what you have to say on this.
Yeah, sure.
So this is my personal coaching session right here. So I totally am with you. I have built my business on relationships, always have, have always made that a priority. The challenge I am having right now is I have a pretty wide network and 15 million different modes of communication that people are using. So they're texting me, they're Facebooking me, they're LinkedIning me. Is that even a word, LinkedIning? No, it is now. It is now. They're emailing me, all with the expectation that I get back to them quickly, because all those modes, that's the expectation. It's not their fault. How do you think about, if your network is your greatest asset, how do you truly think about leveraging it in a way that works and not getting bogged down by it at the same time? And I know, like, that's a great problem to have. So I'm not complaining at all, but I have found myself just this morning, I was like, oh man, I got to get back to all those texts I got yesterday.
I know. Right. If we create the silver bullet for this and this conversation, we're going to package it and bring it to market. Right. Real live innovation here, folks.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So, here's how I think of it, because I have the same challenge. So if I look at my social platforms, and my major social platforms are LinkedIn and Twitter, and then I also have my own email community, right? So between those three platforms right there, we're probably talking in the neighborhood of 6,000 to 10,000 people easily. Mm-hmm. So, but the thing that I remind myself is, even if I have 10,000 contacts, I certainly don't have 10,000 relationships. And so that's the first thing that I remind myself of, that not all of these contacts become relationships, and that's okay. It's not my job to create 10,000 relationships. Do I want to provide them value? 100%, but I'm not going to have close relationships with them. Where I have tried to narrow my focus a bit is to look at my biggest goals, my biggest opportunities, and then determine the relationships and the ecosystems that I need to be building. So if I use myself as an example, I'm a keynote speaker. And so when I look at that as a revenue stream for my business, I have a goal of a number of keynotes that I would like to do in a given year. And that goal is around 20. So when I look at that goal, it's like, all right, I can take a look at that very finite goal. And from that goal, I can create my relationship ecosystems, the different groups of people and organizations where I need to be in order to hit that goal. So that type of thinking has helped me to set a path where I'm building relationship ecosystems around goals that are significant. And that just helps me to keep my focus. I just a personal example to apply that is I'm on the board of the Girl Scouts here locally in Ohio's Heartland, which covers 30 counties in central and southern Ohio. So I take that same idea and apply it to my personal passion, which is my board service. And we have some really big goals that we're looking to accomplish as an organization. So I take that same type of process and I look at the goals that I can contribute to. And what are the relationships that I need to be building and the people that I need to be of service to in order to reach those goals? So definitely not, it's definitely kind of messy. It's an art and a science, but that has helped me to get off the treadmill as much as I can when it comes to the relationship building piece. Because we could be on social platforms all day, every day.
All day, every day. And I really like what you said about, I think for us on Launch Street to really pay attention to is building relationship ecosystems around our goals, because I had an aha moment while you're talking, which is that I think maybe I'm confusing letting other people suck the time for me who want something from me and building relationships. And they're actually two different things.
Do you ever get on a social platform, whatever it is? And I think I had maybe, and I'm not complaining about this either, I bet you I had 100 invitations in my LinkedIn inbox. And I had been procrastinating on going through all of those and accepting all of them, because I go through each one and I look at their profile and, you know, I try to be as discerning as I can about it. And that probably sucked up a good hour plus of my time. Mm-hmm. Yep. So it's easy for that time to just disappear.
Oh my gosh, so disappear. Okay, I want to dig in to, thank you for that personal coaching session. I feel much more.
this is jointly beneficial.
But that really was an aha, the difference between kind of building relationships and leveraging my network and letting people take your time. Two different things. I really want to dig into the five dimensions of a modern seller. And maybe we need some context around what a modern seller is first, but if you're okay with it, that's what I'd like to do. I'd like to go through those dimensions, kind of what they are, an example that shows up in the real world for each of them.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me, to your question, let me tee up the definition of a modern seller. Okay. And then from there, I can dig into the five dimensions and give some examples. So
perfect.
So this definition of the modern seller, I think, just ties really nicely into everything we've talked about so far. And when I think about someone who's a modern seller, there are three things that make them stand out. The first is that a modern seller is someone who is recognized as a differentiator to their clients, and I would even argue their prospects.
What do you mean by that?
Most of us are wired to, we do things for our clients and prospects because they're the right things to do. But we often don't get recognized for the value that we provide in our selling situations or in our client engagement situations. Mm-hmm. We are a modern seller when the client or the prospect really recognizes us as a meaningful, important part of their business. They couldn't imagine doing business without us.
You know, it's interesting that you say it. That's fantastic. And I think that differentiator, a big part of that is being able to drive those innovative solutions and asking them challenging questions that helps them think differently about their business too. It's not always having the solution, I assume. You tell me.
Yeah, no, oftentimes it is not just about having the solution. It is about asking really great questions and seeing it as a collaborative partnership to get to a solution. There are times where the solution is maybe part of my expertise, but then maybe I need to bring in other people. So it's about keeping an open mind to get to the solution that's best for them. Absolutely.
Got it. Okay, so that was one. There was a couple others, right?
Yeah, so the second one is that the value of your product or service isn't fully recognized without you as part of the equation. It's not as valuable without you. Your product or service doesn't just stand alone. Part of it is you are the differentiator. What you bring, your unique expertise, your unique value. So that's the second piece. And then the third piece is that you are seen as part of your client's competitive advantage. You make their business better. They are better in the marketplace. They're more competitive because of the work that you do together.
I love that right there, because I will dig into the five dimensions, which I think will bring light to all of this. But the idea that you've made that big of an impact versus just sold them a solution, whether that's product or service, is massive. And I would say, I'm just going to bring an internal for a second. I would say that if you're on a team, if your leadership needs to see you this way as a differentiator, as the value that you bring as part of that big value, not just the kind of, you know, what's on your to-do list or your job description. And same with that, seen as competitive advantage, like you being on their team is what gives them the advantage.
Oh, you just hit it. This is something that can be used with a prospect or a client. It's also, it's also meaningful inside your organization. Are you this person to your leadership, to your team, et cetera?
Love it. Okay. Five dimensions. I'm ready.
All right. Five dimensions. One last thing that I'll mention is, as you're thinking about these, not every prospect or client is ready for a modern seller. And there is some discernment that we have to have.
Before we dig in, then why not?
So I have, thinking back to a past life, when I was at IBM, I sold a lot into public sector. And I had some education clients. That was one of my verticals. I had some education clients that no matter how hard I tried to be that type of seller for them, what they valued and what was important to them, I just was never going to be able to meet it. And I'm thinking about one client in particular whose their biggest value was they wanted low price. All day, every day, low price. Yeah. And the reality was my competitor was a better fit for them. And so I had to make a choice. Yeah, I was never going to be that. And so therefore I had to make a choice. And so as people are thinking about, okay, how am I going to be this modern seller? Just remember that not every prospect or client is the right fit. because they're at a certain point in their journey where they're not going to be ready for it.
That is a really important point. Thank you for sharing that. Because
absolutely.
To add on that, I think sometimes when we're trying to get buy-in and selling stuff, it's like, we want to be everything to everybody. It's hard to say no to them. They say no to us all the time, but it's hard to say no to them. But actually, it benefits you in the long run.
For sure. For sure. All right. So let me get into the five, and feel free to stop me at any point that you want to dig into one further. So I'll tee up all five. Modern seller is agile, entrepreneurial, holistic, social, and an ambassador. So those are the five. And I like to think of these as sort of skills behind the skills. These are the foundational next generation skill sets that can help us be better at our everyday sales activities. So that was really the catalyst for researching and identifying these five. So the first one is that a modern seller is agile. And the hallmark of someone who is agile is that they are able to take lots and lots of information and be able to process it and filter it and then curate it into ideas that are important to their prospects and clients. Our prospects and clients are so overloaded. Imagine being able to go into a meeting or into a phone call and be able to curate some ideas for that prospect or client that can help them make their business better. That is a hallmark of agility. It's that nimbleness, it's that ability to pivot and to really be uncomfortable or comfortable with the uncomfortable pace of change.
And would you add to that? I mean, that part of that is actually spending your time and your expertise, not just knowing your product or service, the work that you do, but the marketplace that you play in, the marketplace that they play in, so that you can actually be up to date on what's happening. Because to your point about rapid change, like that is the world that all of us live in now.
That's an imperative. And I think that ties nicely into the next one, which is that a modern seller is entrepreneurial. And a modern seller who's entrepreneurial, they really see themselves as the owner of their book of business, as their territory and their territory. They don't just see themselves as an employee of the organization. Mm-hmm. And so where your last comment really ties in well here with this entrepreneurial dimension is, in order to be able to do what you just described, we have to have the courage to verticalize a bit, which for me, oh my gosh, it still gives me, I still get hives thinking about verticalizing, because I want to be all things to all people, right?
Yep, exactly.
And,
everybody.
And in, right? And in order to be that agile seller, that agile entrepreneur, we have some courage to verticalize so that we can be that really well-known expert in a vertical or two. So that's one strategy, that verticalization, or sometimes you might hear it as being called picking a major and a couple of minors that you can really dig into and become well known for. All right, so we hit agile and entrepreneurial. The next one's holistic. And this is about us as part of the modern selling equation, us as individuals. On any given day, we have a finite amount of time, energy, motivation, and discipline. I like to think of those as non-renewable resources, because as we go throughout the day, they get depleted. And the choices that we make with those resources every day is what's going to determine our short-term results and our long-term results. So I like to think of it as being very strategically productive.
I like that. You know, I'll say it's interesting that with the holistic is, I think we have this myth out there that you have to leave your personal life at the door when you go to work. But kind of to your point about like you only have a limited amount of you, the reality is we can't really do that. It doesn't work, because a day is a day and the energy you have is the energy you have.
That's exactly it. I agree. I have tried to in the past be very like to very much separate work and home life. And I found myself struggling with that. And the idea of integration has helped me really accomplish more balance.
Yeah.
Social. Next one, social. So social capital is never going to get a line item on a P&L. Not that I'm aware of anyway, but the idea behind this is individuals and organizations that really get this, they know that their relationships and their networks have very tangible value. This goes back to our conversation about platforms and all the different connections and relationships that we have. So the idea here is being very intentional about the relationships that we want to be building and contributing to in order to reach the results that we'd like to accomplish. So this is about intentional connectivity, essentially.
Got
and
it.
Yep, last one's ambassador. Ambassadors are a bridge. So in a global sense, an ambassador is a bridge between countries and cultures. Much the same way, that's what we are. We are a bridge into our prospects and our clients. We're a bridge back into our organizations, into our industries, into our communities. And when we see ourselves in that way, that's a different way of thinking. And ambassadors are really great at being able to espouse the values of their organization, but they also stand tall in what makes them unique. So they're able to balance those two things out. And they are fantastic at building long-term loyalty. If you are looking to grow your organization by leveraging the customers that you already have, an ambassador is a fantastic person to have on your team because they will grow your share of wallet and your relationships with your existing client base.
Now, are you as an individual, do you have to be really good at all of these? Do you have some that, you know, you are really strong at, so that's what you do, or you're just one of them? How should I think about myself in relation to the five?
The way that I wrote the book was I really tried to make it a field guide. So you could get a baseline understanding of what a modern seller is, look at the overview of each of them, and then pick the one or two that really resonate the most with you. That's always where I like to start. And as we gain confidence, in one, we can always move on to another. I think we are going to be strong in some more than others, and it's not something where you have to be 100% at all five. And if you're in an organization, you're probably well served to have people that are stronger in all different areas so that you get a little bit more diversity.
That's a great way to put it. I really appreciate the five dimensions. And one of the things I just want to call out and get a little more perspective from you on is, you know, with the entrepreneur, what I heard, just to summarize, was it's about someone who's not just like hustling and scrappy, which is what we always think about with entrepreneurs, but also invested in the outcomes. It's not just a job. It's really, they're trying to get to those goals because they own the goals or own the outcomes the way every business owner wants their employees, but doesn't
That's
always get.
Exactly it. An ownership stance really changes the game. There was some research by Forbes, and what they had and what they wanted to do was get to what are the top skills that really make an entrepreneur successful. And so they combed through existing research, they did their own surveys and research, and the number one skill that rises above all the rest is the ability to have a vision.
Yeah.
And I don't think I think you can be inside an organization and have a vision. You don't have to be the CEO of an entrepreneurial startup. You don't have to be the VP of something. You can be an individual contributor and be someone who has vision.
So will you give me an example of how a modern seller meant getting the business or, you know, the success that they were looking for versus the, I don't know if traditional is the right word to say, but the more kind of hard skill, tangible seller?
So let me use myself as an example. And again, I'm going to kind of dig back into the archives of, you know, my own journey as a modern seller. So when I was at IBM, I sold the ultimate commodity. I sold technology products and services, PCs, laptops, tablets.
And IBM I love IBM. I've done some work for them, but they're a very kind of mainstay company. You think of IBM, you're like, yes, that's a good standard company.
Absolutely. You're a traditional blue chip manufacturer.
Yeah.
What I struggled with though, was I had a lot of challenges with figuring out where was my fit? What was the thing that I was going to be known for? And it was really easy to just get sucked into price wars because I sold a commodity product. So a lot of things were driven on price. And selling on price is not fun, and it's not sustainable for the long term.
Right.
So on my own journey, I had to figure out a different way of thinking and a different way of being, really. And so after doing some research, after just kind of stumbling my way through, interviewing people, doing my own homework, what I landed on was that I could become a mobile computing expert in the field of K-12 education. I had a handful of clients that really valued a relationship where they could move their own mobile computing technology platforms within their school districts and their organizations. That was a light bulb moment for me, because I realized these were people that put true value on mobile computing and what it could do for their, you know, their internal customers, if you will, their students. And that helped me to create an entirely different platform for myself. I had business partner ecosystems. I had created this whole new set of clients that were a lot of fun to work with. They were very valuable, and it brought a lot of business in to the organization, but it was mutual lifetime value. So that's one small example from my own life where I've had to make that modern seller journey. And it just food for thought for all of you out there that are looking at where you are today and where you might like to be a year from now or 2 years from now.
That is actually what you just said brings me to a question, which is, if I'm listening to this and I'm sitting here thinking, I don't know that I'm as much of a modern seller as I need to be. I mean, I'm 100% on board with, we need to be agile and entrepreneurial and holistic and social and ambassadors. It is just a different game that we're playing today than we could play even 5 years ago. What are some of the first steps I can take? If I took an assessment of myself and said, I'm not where I should be, what can I do to start heading there?
Yeah. So let me give you a tactical example, and then I'll give you more of maybe a strategic example. So a really tactical example of how you can just something that you can start doing is, it alludes to my earlier comments, go get into a different room. Go find a conference, a group, an event, whatever, that is outside of your norm, that is tied to your business in some way, but just outside of your norm, where you're going to start pushing yourself out of your comfort zone by showing up and participating. You will meet all different kinds of people. You will learn something new, and it's something tactical that you can do within the next 30 days. So that's one real tactical idea. A strategic idea that's really, you know, tied to the book is, if you decide that you want to pick up the book and you want to dig into it more, my recommendation would be to really absorb this definition of the modern seller and to find one of those five that really resonate with you, and then dig into it, learn about it. The book has a lot of other practical, applicable strategies to help build that dimension. That is a little bit more of a longer term play, but something more strategic in my second recommendation.
We'll put a link to the book, of course, in the show notes, but I really appreciate what you're saying about pick one and start digging in there versus trying to do all of it. Because I don't know about you, but for me, that shuts me down, because then I can't do anything. So I don't have the time.
Exactly. And you know, I'm the person that says, all right, I'm going to dig into all five of these at once. I have so much time. I'm going to do all of it. And then, to your point, I freeze. I don't know where to go next. So pick the one that just seems the most interesting to you and have at it.
You know, one of the things I've started doing more of, and I guess this probably fits under Agile, I have apps, news apps on my phone, of course, most of us do, I've committed to spending just 10 minutes browsing the news for things that are relevant to my clients. And sometimes I find stuff, sometimes I don't, but either way, I am forced to dig into what's happening in the world and business and the marketplace, sometimes in, I don't know, lifestyle and entertainment. You never know where the rabbit hole takes me. But it's really actually helped my selling, because I just have more knowledge than I had before. And sometimes I find something that's relevant and I forward it with a thought, you know, my thoughts behind it to the client or whatever. But just 10 minutes on the app has helped me tremendously.
I love that. And one food for thought that I'll add to that is, from a local perspective, so just thinking about, you know, who's in our own backyard, I get two local print publications, my local business journal for Columbus and then the local business journal for Cleveland, which is my hometown. I don't read them in depth, but I get them every week, and I just skim them. I skim them to see what's happening in my local community, in my state. And in addition to your idea of the global perspective, it helps me get a local perspective with any clients I happen to have here.
Yeah. And sometimes I don't even know what I'm looking for. I'm just looking. And never know, kind of to your thing about getting in new rooms, I think it's kind of that same thing of, sometimes you just got to be open to new perspectives and new ideas and not have an agenda going into it.
That's a hallmark of agility too, is that ability to make connections from things that are kind of disparate. They don't seem like they'd be connected on the surface, but when you give yourself the time and the space to ponder, your brain starts to make those connections and it makes you more innovative in the eyes of your prospects and clients.
So that's a part of an answer to my next question, but I'd like to expand more on it. How does being a modern seller also help you be a better innovator and, to what you were saying in the beginning, a strategic partner to your clients?
Yeah, so we're always striving to be that strategic partner in the eyes of our clients. And to my earlier example, not everybody's ready for that strategic partner, but right. when we find those prospects and clients that is what they're looking for, we are all striving to be that strategic partner. On the topic of becoming more innovative, so that my comments on connecting disparate things is absolutely a way that we can become more innovative. Also understanding what's innovative in the eyes of our prospects and clients. What's innovative in one industry might be different than another industry.
That's a great point. That's a really great point, because you're absolutely right. And they're coming from different places of how big or how much boundary pushing they're willing to do. So you got to know where they are in their journey of innovation.
So I'll, a very small example that may not seem like innovation on the surface, but I do a lot of work in professional services and all different kinds, public accounting, technology, professional services, you name it. But one of the things that I found really interesting in the professional services space is that for all the rigor that they have around their different products and services, especially in public accounting, but for all the rigor that they have, there was not rigor and process around how do we sell and develop new business. And that was an eye-opener for me, where I thought, you know, this is a space I could fit into really well with my strategic selling program, and to help them have more rigor and more process around how they actually develop their prospect relationships and their client relationships. And that was a light bulb moment for them too, because they hadn't really thought about it in that way. Mm. So just that's one example of innovation that I didn't think of it in that way at the time, but it really helped to change the game for some of my prospects and clients.
What do you see that stops individuals from, I'm actually going to ask this kind of twofold. One is from innovating, but I think layered to that is also from being a modern seller. Why do we stay in that more traditional role?
The value of innovative thinking and the value of modern selling. So that's one thing to be looking for. How is the organization actually embracing those two things? And they fit well together. From a personal standpoint, I would say the biggest thing that holds us back is possibly fear, and also just the status quo. Because thinking innovatively and really thinking and adopting these modern selling principles takes conscious effort. It takes time and space, and we have to be really dedicated to it. And it's super easy to slip back into the status quo. So maybe even more status quo than fear. We just have to get ourselves out of our own ruts and build new habits.
It is amazing how easy it is to stay in what you know and what's comfortable, even when it's not pushing you forward, because it's comfortable. Like it's sometimes it's amazing to me. And I do think with some of the dimensions you're talking about here, it's going to force us to step out a little bit and test our, you know, skills and get new skills and do or say, or, you know, even like to your tangible action of going to new groups. For some of us, even in sales, you know, the idea of having to go talk to new people you don't know is like, oh, I'm so outside my comfort zone.
Right. Not every seller is a raging extrovert. Some of us are more in the ambivert / introvert end of the spectrum there.
Yeah. So before we have to close out, where can people go to learn more and connect with you?
Yeah, the best place to connect with me, I'll give you two places, amyfranco.com. And then secondly, on LinkedIn, Amy Franco.
Got it. I meant to ask this question earlier before we kind of do the close out, you know, Oprah couch question. In writing your book and in your years of experience, was there anything about the modern seller that surprised you, or any data or research or even case study that you didn't expect?
Yeah. So I would say from a content standpoint, as I was socializing this, doing research, marketing the book, the one element of the five, the one dimension of the five that always got the most questions was the one about ambassador. That's really interesting. Tell me more about that. That surprised me. I'm not sure why it surprised me, but it was just interesting that that one seemed to really resonate very highly, resonate the most with people. And then I would say from a personal standpoint, I learned a lot about myself in the process of writing the book. And the writing a book is not a task. It's not a project. It's an initiative. And it takes a serious amount of dedication. And I learned a lot about myself in the process. And it's I've grown tremendously just from that experience and putting myself in a place of being uncomfortable and putting this work out into the world to share with people.
You know, Amy, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I, not just, a couple months ago now, submitted my complete manuscript to my publisher. Ooh. And I think I slept for 2 days afterwards.
But yes.
I was exhausted. But to your point, while my book is about everybody else and how people innovate and individuals innovate, I actually walked away with a lot more insight about myself too. It's just, you know, if you're out there listening, I would encourage you to think about spending some time just writing, because there's something about that process that pulls stuff out of the depth of you that you didn't know or didn't expect.
I 100% agree. And congratulations on that huge milestone.
Thanks. And just to loop it back to what you're saying, I'm very curious as to why the ambassador was so intriguing for people. And I wonder if there's something very, I wonder if that's because we see it as a very positive thing, the word itself, to be an ambassador, or if there's something else in kind of your explanation of it about being the bridge that really resonated with people.
Yeah, I would say probably a couple of reasons. First, it was just maybe a different phrase, a different word that perked people up. Like, ambassador. Tell me more about that. What does that mean? And I would say, secondly, the idea behind ambassador is building long-term loyalty, and this idea that we work so hard to build the relationships that we have and to get the customers that we have. How can we continue to work with those customers and thrive with those customers? And I think that resonates with people as well, because there's this yin and the yang of prospecting and new business development versus really working with the clients that we already have and deepening those relationships. And I get the sense that resonated well with people.
You know, I'm so glad to hear you mention that, because that's definitely something that we've struggled with in any business company I worked for, my own business, is kind of balance of really digging in with the clients you have and still kind of filling the basket with new clients. And I think what I'm hearing you saying, and tell me if I'm wrong, is that you really want both of those. It's not an either or situation here.
Yeah, 100%. You have to have both to have a healthy organization. And it's finding the balance that works for your organization of making sure that you are filling that basket, you're filling the pipeline. But once you've won those customers, those clients, make sure that they become your champions out in the marketplace, because they'll actually help you fill the basket.
Yeah, that's a great point. So on that, the final question is, what's your final piece of advice for innovators seeking to be more of a modern seller?
My final advice, you're an innovator seeking to be a modern seller, is to really step into your own leadership. This is a leadership conversation as much as it is anything else. And our organizations, our communities, the greater world, they need all of us innovators to be willing to put our ideas out into the world and really take a leadership role.
I love that. Step into your own leadership. And I mean, you're so right. And this is why I wanted to have you on the show, because I think your concept and the way you talk about modern seller really is about leadership. And we're all selling in some way. It just depends on who we're talking to. It's either internal or external, but it's still selling.
Absolutely.
Well, Amy, thank you so much. This has been fantastic. Launch Street, go get the book. It is phenomenal. And I will tell you, so you had said pick two that resonate with you. I will say, I mean, entrepreneur is kind of obvious, but I feel like as the business owner, that's cheating to pick that one, because I have to be invested whether I like it or not.
Right.
So I'm going to go with Agile and Ambassador, because I do love the bridge is what really feeds my soul too.
So fantastic.
Those are my two. Yeah. Do you have two that really resonate with you?
I would say agility resonates with me, and also holistic resonates with me.
Interesting.
Yeah.
See, that tells you a lot about a person right there.
I may have to build that into the next round of content is an assessment or something. You've given me some food for thought to be more innovative with this.
Well, I hope you do. We can have that conversation separately because, as you know, we have one. We can have that conversation separately, but I think you should. Amy, this was so great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tamara. I appreciate it.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, launchstreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.